Thanks very much. So let me just begin by telling you just a little bit about what the Whole Village Project is. And I should also mention that I have no relationships to disclose. So the Whole Village Project is designed as a longitudinal study to begin looking at different changes over time in rural villages in Tanzania in order to be able to evaluate different development projects that are ongoing. So we're quite comprehensive in the survey tools and qualitative data tools that we use. And so what I'll be presenting today is just focusing on questions related to food security and nutrition issues. But we have a lot more other data to share and present. One of our objectives besides collecting this data is to be sure that we present it back to the communities from where we receive it. So usually within 9 to 10 months, our survey team returns to the villages and presents it to the villages as well as district government leaders. Let me say a little bit, right now our data is, we're working in northern Tanzania. You see there Arusha and Mwanza, those are two communities in north, a little bit north and south of each of those where we've been collecting data. We've been in village up to 40 villages now in the last 12 months, and we'll get up to 55 villages by March. My co-authors on this project are also from the University of Minnesota and Savannah's Forever Tanzania, which is an incorporated NGO in Tanzania, made up primarily of Tanzanians. And the research team is made up, also incorporating staff from the National Institutes of Medical Research and the Tanzanian Wildlife and Research Institute. And our Savannah's Forever team usually is the one who's going out and doing the data collection. So it's Tanzanians doing data collection with Tanzanians. And we're using PDAs in order to collect the data. So our survey is all on a PDA. And after they complete surveys, at the end of a week, they'll download it and send it as an attachment to us in the University of Minnesota. And we'll do the data analysis and data cleaning and then send it back to them and also assist with reports. So this is our vision, again, and we're looking at using Tanzania as a pilot, that this is a methodology that could be used in other countries. And so we're focusing now in Africa because that's where we have relationships and where we're located. But we see this as a potential tool and methodology to be used elsewhere. Give you a better idea of where we're working right now. This is just a GIS map. The red dots represent different villages in Tanzania. And to tell you a little bit more about the methods, right now we're doing household surveys. And as you heard in one of the earlier presentations, what we do is we collect data from the village leaders about all the household names. And then we use a computer randomized selection process to select 65 to 70 households to conduct our household surveys. In addition to the household surveys, we're also asking questions. We're also doing individual surveys with adults 15 and over about knowledge, attitudes, and practice around HIV/AIDS. And then for any children in the household under 5, we're doing height and weight measurements and also asking about breastfeeding practices, young child feeding practices, and so forth. We also do a number of focus groups, and this is, we do focus groups with men and women. We also do them with agricultural, or the top farmers and livestock holders in the communities, with village leaders. And then we do key informant interviews with all headmasters of schools. And if there's a clinic or a hospital in the village, we would do key informant interviews with them as well. Another activity that we do is called an institutional analysis, in which we gather a group of 12 to 15 villagers of mixed gender and ages and ask them to really identify what are the key organizations or institutions working in this village, and to indicate that by the size of a circle the importance of that institution within that village. So usually these start with schools and churches or mosques and clinics, and then you move to NGOs and community-based organizations that might be functioning there. And then they go from talking about the importance of that institution to how effective it is at doing what it does. So we get some very interesting qualitative data from folks on how they interpret that. And then, as I said, we return to the team, to the villages, after within at least 10 months, report results. This is just an example, Edward Sandet doing a PowerPoint presentation back in a village. Seeing some of the same slides you might be seeing later today. And then in another slide here, working with more paper, just reviewing with one community some of the results. Here they're talking about farming and education and HIV/AIDS. And one of the intents is when we bring that data back is to explore with the community, well, how can they use this data to think about who they want working in their villages in terms of NGOs or asking government for assistance to help them be more proactive in identifying their own needs as well as things they can do for themselves. So let me just share with you some of our results. This is primarily coming from about 27 villages. The average size of a village is about 3,500 people. Usually about 500 families or households, and we average about 65 households per village, and the average household size is a little over 5. We do see a lot of variation between villages. I think a lot of people think, you know, uniformly about villages in rural Africa or wherever, but even with villages that are 10 or 20 kilometers apart, we can see a lot of differences in terms of assets they have, access to clean water, quality of education. And so what I wanted to be sure to show you here, the minimum maximum variation, so you have a sense of that variation. And just to make a note about female-headed households, according to the Tanzanian government definition of a female-headed household, if you're in a polygamous household, if you're second, third, or other wife, you are considered to be a head of household. So this figure includes those women, as well as women who are single or divorced or widowed. And I think when we think about food security, it's more than just the food you eat. There are many external factors, large macro factors that affect those results. And just some of the external factors, of course, we noticed in our data and with villagers was issues of drought. Last year, there was a severe drought in northern Tanzania, which also affected Kenya and Ethiopia and Uganda. And so, you know, our team was walking to villages where you had carcasses of cows and donkeys and people who had gone without eating food in the last 24 hours. So it was a difficult survey to conduct. But then you also have skyrocketing food prices, and then they're going up, and then they're going down. So whether you're selling or whether you're buying, it can be very difficult to keep track of. And of course, government policies influence that as well. We see a lot of variation in terms of villages, in terms of their access to markets, access to credit, and again, how many rainy seasons do they have? Tanzania has a very diverse geography, and so we see a lot of variation in terms of those factors as well. And you can see, of course, many household characteristics. Just to give you a sense, one factor we keep seeing again and again is the variation between agricultural households versus primarily pastoralist households. So this graph is really showing, on the left is a food insecurity scale. It says food security, but it should say food insecurity. And let me just say a little bit more, I didn't define that measure. Here we're using a food insecurity scale. It's a 9-point question coming from Coates, again, a USAID document there. And they ask questions like, in the last month, how many have you gone to bed without eating? How often have you had to worry about food? Have you had to reduce the amount of food that you eat? So using that 9-item scale, we get food insecurity. So in the gray, we have the pastoralist households, and the in-between colors are villages that are more of a mix between pastoralists and agriculturalists. But what we were able to see here is that agriculturalists have more protective factors when it comes to food insecurity overall. And just to give you a sense of geography and variation, you can see to the left much more. They probably get two rainy seasons here. It's much greener. Over here, it's a lot drier. So a lot more limitations in terms of growing season and what you can do with the land. So here again, just to emphasize some of the variation of differences between pastoralists and agriculturalists. On the left, Makame and Ndedo are both pastoralist villages. So again, even though they're both pastoralists, they don't look exactly the same. And the line is the median on the village, and the bottom is the food insecurity score. So you can see Makame has great issues of food insecurity, Ndedo's less so, but more so than either of the two agricultural villages, Filimo and Masweya. So again, the agricultural villages having a little bit more protective factors going on. Another contributing household factor is the level of education of the household head. So beginning at the top, that is indicating greater than standard 7 or primary school education. So there's less food insecurity the more educated your household head is. Another factor, we've also been asking about kitchen gardens. And here's a picture of more of a sack garden, but these are small gardens you can have beside your house in addition to a larger plot of land. And it doesn't take a lot of water or maintenance. But again, what we notice is that actually overall very few households have them. Primarily agricultural households have them more than pastoralists. And people with greater assets or wealth have them more often, and people with more education have them more often. And of course, and then in the lower right-hand corner, looking at food variety, using some of the same nutrition scores that were discussed earlier, we see greater food variety, again, in agricultural households and less food insecurity where there is greater food variety, which we'd all expect. Access to water is an ongoing issue. It's number one topic when we ask villages, what's your top priority or problem? Water, access to health care, and good quality schools are the top three issues that come up over and over again in focus groups. Even though a village may have access to protected water, such as this public tap you see in the photograph, it may not be in their village, or it's broken in their village. They're having to walk 1 or 2 hours to a neighboring village to get access to their public tap. But most of the villages actually don't have public taps, and many are still using surface water or unprotected water sources. Unfortunately, still many people are not treating the water, even when they know that it's coming from an unprotected source. Those who do treat water are usually just boiling it. Coming to the gender issue, the women-headed households, we see in this first graph here, have greater food insecurity. And the other factor here we're talking about here is impact of wildlife on your crops or your livestock. For villages that are closer to national parks, they have greater, unfortunately, they have problems with elephants and with lions and other other wildlife like that. The elephants destroying crops along with wild pigs and baboons, and then some hyenas, wild dogs, and lions occasionally will kill or injure livestock of one kind or another. I bring in here school lunch because we talk about so much in the U.S. and how important a good school lunch is and the quality of the food in our schools. Then it's a question we ask the headmasters. How many of the kids arrive at school having eaten nothing or only having tea? And overall, we're seeing 76% of kids coming in hungry. And yet only a little over 50% of the schools are reporting that they provide any food. And so we know what it is to study when you're hungry. It's not easy to listen if you're hungry. And the students, as you can see, are often trying to learn in very difficult circumstances. We are also asking clinic leaders and village leaders if they receive food assistance from any outside organizations. And in 21 villages that reported that, 71% said they are receiving food aid. This is usually maize, sometimes oil as well. We heard most often about the World Food Program. And from our institutional analysis in one of the villages, you can see how they talked about the World Food Program. Overwhelmingly positive. They are very grateful to receive that assistance. And I thought one of the interesting strengths they highlighted was that it reduced truancy in school because kids are getting food. On the other side, they'd like the village, the government, to help with getting more food, and sugar would be great too. The only problem with this outside assistance is that it's only a short-term fix, and it's not sustainable. there's so many systemic issues in the agricultural sector that are, you know, limiting the quality of production, the amount of agricultural production. Much of this is well known, and Food and Agricultural Organization talks about it for soil quality, for seed quality, limited irrigation practices, or use of organic manure or other forms of fertilizer. And then there's inconsistent livestock vaccinations. You're losing your livestock to disease, fluctuating food prices, access to markets and credit. These are all, unfortunately, well-known issues that continue to be inadequately addressed. I think, so just to end here with some takeaway points, I think I've already made the point that there is a large variation between villages and issues of food insecurity. Some are doing quite well. They could all do better. So there's always opportunity for more. But that change needs to happen at multiple levels. It can't just be at one level. It can't just be at the household level. There needs to be more of a systems approach to that change. And I would emphasize, you know, the African governments took a pledge a few years ago to try to pledge at least 7% of their national budget towards agriculture. And most of them haven't gotten there yet. Tanzania is still at 4%. Internationally, the U.S. government, through Obama's Feed the Future program, is going to be committing a significant amount of money towards Tanzania. It's one of the priority countries. So they will have that opportunity to take advantage of that. And many foundations are also focusing, as well as the UN and Food and Agricultural Organization, are focusing on food security. So it's a great opportunity, but it all comes back to how is that trickling down to the village level? Is it really changing systems? Is it really changing access to credit and access to markets and those issues? So with that, I'd just like to also acknowledge my co-authors from these different institutions and universities and our funding support, and also the hard work of the villagers and their time that contributed to this. So thank you very much. Thank you for that. We were looking at children under 5 and doing the height and weight measurements, and then using the WHO standard and looking at Z-scores that were below 2 standard deviations. I'm not sure. I haven't been on those. I haven't had an opportunity to listen into those. And I'm actually off to Tanzania on Friday. So one of the things I hope to learn about is hearing more of the qualitative response the teams have gotten when they've been back to the villages. I do know they've taken the reports at the district level and are very excited to have real data that's time sensitive. It's not coming from the national level and it's 5 years old. It's actually current data. So, but I'm hoping to learn some of those stories and hear some of that reporting when I get there next week. Did you say illiteracy? Who in the program are you? Because we're doing survey collection at this. Are you just asking in general about the population, or?
Yeah.
Tanzania has a very high literacy rate. It's about between 75% and 85% for men and women. And the greater illiteracy is really with rural women who are particularly Maasai women, because there's less education of kids, boys and girls, in the Maasai villages. And there's not a high priority on education. And there are a few other villages where we've seen that issue. But in general, again, what we've seen is the national statistic in general, which is the 75 to 80% literacy.
One final question.
No, they don't want us there. they're doing too much of their own evaluation. They said we've talked with them, and they said, you know, we're over analyzing these folks as it is, so it would be too messy for us to come in. So we've talked with them about doing some comparative data in neighboring villages, and they like that idea because we cover a lot of the same indicators. But at this time, neither of us has funding to support that. So if we find some additional funding, So it's too soon to say how different our indicators are from theirs. But we'll keep looking, because it's worthwhile looking at that, doing that comparison.
Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks for your time.